Travel is great, but planning for travel can be time-consuming and difficult. That's where One Travel comes in. With One Travel, you'll find everything you need to book the perfect trip. Flights, hotels, cars, transportation, it's all right there. With One Travel, you can book online, via app, or even pick up the phone and talk to a travel advisor ready to help you make your selections. Visit onetravel.com/music or call 855-437-2154. Plan it, book it, live it. One Travel.
Tonight's celebrations, hope, and new warnings. Easter gatherings across the world as Americans fly in record numbers and vaccinations rise. But now there's a new epicenter for COVID in the U.S. and a new double mutant variant. How dangerous is it? The race to stop a disaster, hundreds of millions of gallons of dangerous wastewater on the verge of bursting and flooding neighborhoods in Florida.
I'm terrified of my 7-year-old having to go through something catastrophic.
The National Guard bringing in pumps to contain it. Desperate plea, the Capitol Hill Police Union says they're understaffed and struggling after Friday's attack left one of their own dead. And the emotional moment the injured officer left the hospital. The blockbuster witness expected tomorrow in the Derek Chauvin trial, the Minneapolis police chief set to testify for the prosecution. Airlines ramping up for a summer travel surge, what they're now doing to get you to your destination faster.
This is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening on this Easter Sunday, the second Easter of the pandemic. And it was a day filled with signs of hope, but also some worry. Pope Francis celebrated Mass today in front of a small group at the Vatican. St. Peter's Square outside was empty. Italy is under a strict COVID lockdown. In the U.S., churches are coming back to life, from socially distanced Mass at St. Patrick's in New York to this service at an outdoor baseball stadium. And there's positive news about vaccines. More than 106 million Americans now have at least one dose. Steve Patterson starts us off tonight.
Tonight, a global challenge of faith. On this second Easter in the age of COVID, in-person services are back, but different. Across the country, houses of worship, a mix of social distancing, technology, and strong messaging.
We also ask that you please continue wearing your mask as you sing during our Mass today.
But the virus, still top of mind for many. Just 27% of Americans planned on attending church in person this year. That hesitation enveloping even the most holy of places. Pope Francis hosting his annual Easter Vatican Vigil to a flock of only about 200 in-person parishioners, urging faith through the dark months ahead. Those prayers for good reason, as Europe struggles. At an Italian hospital, staff hoping to add a little Easter cheer as the country slides back into another nationwide lockdown. France, now in the midst of its third national lockdown. With vaccinations slowed, daily new infections have doubled across the country since February. In Paris, police deployed more than 6,600 officers to enforce new restrictions, including a travel ban and nationwide curfew. Back in the U.S., Americans are now bracing against early signs of a fourth wave. New data showing a nearly 20% increase in cases from just 2 weeks ago. Saturday, Michigan reported more than 8,400 new cases, its highest since early December.
In terms of the United States, we're just at the beginning of this surge. We haven't even really begun to see it yet.
But on this day of celebration and worship, with more than 100 million Americans now vaccinated, a ray of hope shines brighter than ever before.
Our proof that disease does not win, that death does not win, for our hope lies in you.
And Steve, tell us about the new variant that's been found in the U.S.
Yeah, Kate, researchers have dubbed this a double mutant variant because it has two mutations which may make it spread at a much faster rate. This weekend, at least one case was discovered in Northern California. Kate?
Steve Patterson, thank you. An emergency is unfolding in Florida at this hour. Hundreds are being evacuated as the governor warns of a potentially catastrophic flood from a wastewater reservoir that could collapse near Tampa. Sam Brock is there.
Tonight, the breach in this Florida wastewater reservoir is getting bigger as Manatee County remains under a local state of emergency.
What we're looking at now is trying to prevent and respond to, if need be, a real catastrophic flood situation.
A leaky man-made pond started with 480 million gallons of salt water mixed with nitrogen and ammonia, now under 300 million, but threatening to burst. The Florida National Guard airdropping more pumps in, preparing to double the water flowing out as concern from evacuees escalates. Candace Kays and her friends and family forced to flee after much deliberation.
As much as I don't want to leave my home just because of worries of anything happening, I'm terrified of my 7-year-old having to go through something catastrophic.
People from more than 300 homes instructed to leave the area. A community crushed by the circumstances. Omar Irak's business is right on the edge of the evacuation zone.
Our health can't come back if we get sick from something that could have been prevented.
The county administrator acknowledging the infrastructure problems could have been dealt with decades ago, but state environmental officials say there's no threat of radioactive water.
The southern pond, as we mentioned, is mainly seawater.
For those people who are worried, they hear radioactive elements in water, which is what's being reported right now. You're saying that that's not a concern?
Correct.
As for hundreds of millions of gallons being flushed into the Gulf, scientists say that will impact the ecosystem.
So algae blooms, what they do is they block off oxygen. So fish and other things that are dependent on oxygen in their water suddenly start to suffocate.
And Sam, it's not just homes under threat in this evacuation zone, right?
Kate, there's a natural gas facility in there linked to a 745-mile-long network that provides gas to large chunks of Florida, which means millions could likely be affected if it's flooded. The company that runs it did not respond to our request for comment. Kate?
All right, Sam Brock on it for us. Thank you, Sam. Now to the call for help coming from Capitol Hill police officers after Friday's attack. Their union says they are severely understaffed and reeling after multiple deaths following the January 6th assault. It's raising new questions on how to secure one of the most important buildings in the country. Kelly O'Donnell has more.
Recovery and relief. Fellow officers from the U.S. Capitol Police cheered for their survivor. Officer Ken Shaver, injured in Friday's attack, is on the mend. While today, renewed urgency for improved Capitol security after the car assault that killed Officer Billy Evans and left the suspect, Noah Green, dead. In the wake of the insurrection, retired General Honoré is advising Congress on security.
The number one mission is to secure the Capitol, but make sure it has 100% public access.
The Capitol Police Union is urging Congress to hire more, saying its workforce is currently short by 233 officers. We are struggling to meet existing mission requirements. Fencing is at the center of the security debate. Some temporary cement barriers added this weekend, while other fencing with razor wire was recently removed. Many lawmakers oppose making fences permanent.
I don't think it does the job. In fact, the fencing was right there when the car drove through.
And Kelly, General Honoré also had some specific security recommendations.
That's right, Kate. The task force he is leading is telling Congress they need several hundred, more than 800 additional officers to join the force and to develop intelligence capabilities the department doesn't have now. Kate?
Kelly O'Donnell in D.C. for us. Kelly, thank you. The trial of Derek Chauvin resumes tomorrow. He is the former Minneapolis police officer accused of killing George Floyd. And tomorrow, yet another member of the force, this time the police chief, is expected to testify against his former colleague. Megan Fitzgerald reports.
And Mr. Floyd was no longer offering up any resistance to the officers. They could have ended their restraint.
In a rare move, the traditional blue wall of silence broken as two Minneapolis police officers testified against their own.
Totally unnecessary.
Now their chief, Madaria Arredondo, prepares to take the witness stand for the prosecution.
We're seeing them blow through that thin blue line one after another.
What do we expect the chief to say when he testifies?
We anticipate that chief of police will come in and say this was contrary to our use of force policies, and it was totally unnecessary and excessive.
In court, the defense disagreed.
You as an officer are allowed to use whatever force is reasonable and necessary
correct?
Yes.
The prosecution also expected to call Dr. Andrew Baker, Hennepin County's medical examiner. His autopsy report says Floyd died from cardiopulmonary arrest. In other words, his heart stopped because it wasn't getting enough oxygen.
Importantly, he said he found no injuries to George Floyd's neck, either externally or internally. You can bet, Megan, the defense will jump on that.
The defense trying to convince the jury that drugs led to Floyd's death and not the knee on his neck for more than 9 minutes.
Megan, the chief of police has faced some criticism for his actions after Floyd's death.
Kate, Chief Orodondo fired all four officers involved less than 24 hours after Floyd's death. The Minneapolis Police Union accused him of not giving the officers due process, so you can bet all eyes will be on the chief when he takes the witness stand. Kate?
Up next, ready to travel? What airlines are adding this summer to get you to the beach even faster? Also, the lawmaker mother of five on a mission to protect some of the nation's most vulnerable children.
The UN Refugee Agency, or UNHCR, responds to emergencies and provides long-term solutions for refugees. They provide aid in over 130 countries, including Ukraine, Syria, Afghanistan, and Sudan, where people are forced to flee from war and persecution at their greatest moment of need. UNHCR helps and protects refugees by providing food, shelter, medical care, and other life-saving essentials. The agency jumpstarts relief in three key ways. They transport core relief items stored in even the most remote areas of the world. They deploy expert emergency staff trained to help in crisis situations. And they transfer funds directly to support the emergency. Because of generous supporters and donors, UNHCR can scale up its response within 72 hours of a large-scale emergency. Your support helps provide life-saving aid for refugees whenever and wherever emergencies occur. Donate to USA for UNHCR by visiting unrefugees.org/donation.
Back with more of an NBC News investigation about a for-profit company that operates group youth homes meant to provide care for foster children, kids with mental health or developmental disorders, and youth from the juvenile justice system. But critics say the children have become commodities, and one state senator from Oregon is taking on the company and trying to change the system.
These are not treatment programs. These are facilities to warehouse and manage kids without any treatment expertise, and the goal is to make money, not to make kids healthy.
Sarah Gelser, a mother of five, never thought she'd spend years taking on a multi-million dollar company.
Right, the Senate Committee on Human Services will come to order.
It was early 2019 when Senator Gelser discovered the state of Oregon had shipped more than 80 kids to group facilities in other states.
These are kids who have been placed out of sight, and it is my intention that we are going to ensure that they are no longer out of mind.
It's the talking points that you hear from everyone. We don't have the services that these very high-need kids need.
So they have to be sent out of state.
Correct.
Oregon paid hundreds of dollars a day to have a child sent to facilities run by Sequel Youth and Family Services. Gelser started hearing allegations that staff overused physical restraints. After visiting multiple Sequel facilities, she issued a dire warning to company executives.
I was very afraid a kid was going to die.
Months later, it happened. 16-year-old Cornelius Frederick died after he was restrained by six adults on the floor of a cafeteria at Lakeside Academy in Michigan.
That is a violent response, what the staff did, and then how long they held him down is shocking to people when they watch it, but it was not shocking to anybody that was in that lunchroom.
Child advocate Daniel Hatcher says those physical restraints Sarah Gelser was so concerned about are not accidental, but an intentional way to keep costs down.
If you might otherwise need a staff person with the level of training and skill to care for a child with particular difficulties, if you simply put them in physical restraint, you don't need a staff member with that level of skill, right? So it makes the child cheaper.
The use of restraint is only when there is an imminent or immediate danger to the client themselves or others.
Mary Ann Birmingham is Senior Director of Compliance and Quality Management at Sequel.
Are kids safe at your facilities?
I understand your concern with what you've seen with these allegations, and I can assure you that we take every step we can to ensure the safety of the clients and the staff in our care.
The state of Michigan is now set to ban the use of restraints in youth facilities. Sequel calls Cornelius Frederick's death senseless and tragic and says it fired those involved who were, quote, in clear violation of policies and training. You can see our full hour tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific on MSNBC. Still ahead, why airlines are adding so many new routes and how they could make your summer vacation easier and cheaper. In the past few days, we've seen some of the highest numbers of air travelers since the pandemic began. And now, with more people vaccinated and itching for vacations, airlines are adding hundreds of new direct routes to summer destinations. Stephanie Rule has more.
For millions of Americans like the Palchak family,
tomorrow marks 6 weeks before
vacation.
That's right.
A vacation can't come soon enough.
We just could not wait.
They're booked on a flight from Baltimore to Fort Walton Beach in Florida, a route that never existed before on Southwest. As demand surges, U.S. airlines are adding more than 250 brand new routes by Memorial Day, offering direct links to vacation destinations across the country, like Milwaukee to Myrtle Beach, Pittsburgh to Pensacola, and Columbus to Charleston.
We are providing customers access to nonstop routes that we haven't ever done before.
Ankit Gupta is the vice president of domestic scheduling for United Airlines. He says United is seeing its highest ticket sales since the start of the pandemic.
Is this in response to people being excited about summer leisure travel domestically?
That is absolutely right. A combination of the pent-up demand plus these leisure destinations opening up within the U.S. That is creating this increased demand.
While passenger volume was way down at major airports in New York and L.A., it's actually already up above pre-pandemic levels in places like Ski Country in Colorado, Key West, and Myrtle Beach.
What has tourism been like for Myrtle Beach?
We had an incredible March and actually saw numbers that equaled June and July. So the forecast here is for a very busy summer.
The CDC is still advising against leisure travel. But as demand surges, experts warn prices may spike as much as 45% by Memorial Day.
COVID isn't gone. What should we know before booking travel?
Travelers should do their research, understand if there are COVID restrictions, where they're headed, and what's expected of them as a visitor. We have a responsibility to keep the COVID case rates going down, travelers included.
For the Palchaks, this year, that new direct flight gets them to their destination cheaper and faster.
There was just no brainer. And then I think part of the excitement, we ended up adding two more days to our vacation for this year.
Stephanie Rule, NBC News.
When we come back, the new hope of spring, what faith can tell us about coming out of dark times stronger and better. Before we go this Easter Sunday, our Harry Smith speaks with faith leaders about hope, light, and what it means to move ahead.
Last spring was a blur of sirens and closures and fear. This spring feels different.
This Holy Week comes. What are some of the thoughts that go through your mind and heart?
We've seen a lot of darkness. We've seen a lot of discouragement, a lot of despair, a lot of death. We're just yearning to pass over to new life and light and hope and promise. And that's what Holy Week and Easter give us.
We spoke with Cardinal Dolan at St. Patrick's Cathedral.
His rising becomes our rising. So this is the very time of the year when we're going from the bleak nature of winter. Oh my God, we're going to more light, more life, growth, hope. Oh my God, that's the message of Holy Week and Easter. And do we ever need it?
What was it like trying to lead a congregation in the middle of a pandemic?
It's hard to lead a congregation that can't congregate.
Diana Fursco is senior rabbi at the Village Temple in Manhattan. Passover, she reminds us, commemorates the Jews' deliverance from slavery.
For me, everything really ties back to the story of the Exodus. And I think of us right now, metaphorically, as still being in the midst of the sea. The sort of beginning of the pandemic is behind us, the post-pandemic world is still to come.
So there are walls of water.
That's right.
Surging on either side of us.
Well, I think it's a good lesson because you can't see the future necessarily. You don't know what's coming after the pandemic. We can learn from our story.
Deliverance, renewal, rebirth. The stories coincide. Michael Walrond is senior pastor at Corinthian Baptist Church in Harlem.
Resurrection Sunday for me is always powerful. It symbolizes that what we view as sometimes bad endings always have a new beginning. That's what resurrection symbolizes, that even in the midst of the grips of death, life can still be experienced.
The symbols of which abound in springtime.
To hear the birds sing, sign of hope. The sun shining, a sign of hope. Even when the winds are blowing, even like right now, when those winds that seem contradictory and against us, there's still a possibility to cut through all of that with a resounding anthem and voice of hope.
I am resilient. Hope, says Reverend Walrond. Hope, says Rabbi Fersko.
Passover is a story about hope and faith and redemption, even in the face of struggle.
It's hope, says Cardinal Dolan, that connects us.
We can never lose our sense of hope, all right? As Jesus didn't, as for 40 years the people of Israel didn't.
Life in the midst of death, hope in the midst of failure, belief in the midst of doubt, love in the midst of hate, and resilience when you forgot how strong you were. That's the message.
Amen.
Amen.
Harry Smith, NBC News, New York.
Hope. Thank you, Harry. That is NBC Nightly News for this Easter Sunday and final day of Passover. I'm Kate Snow. For all of us here at NBC News, stay safe and have a great night.
Travel is great, but planning for travel can be time-consuming and difficult. That's where One Travel comes in. With One Travel, you'll find everything you need to book the perfect trip. Flights, hotels, cars, transportation, it's all right there. With One Travel, you can book online, via app, or even pick up the phone and talk to a travel advisor ready to help you make your selections. Visit onetravel.com/music or call 855-437-2154. Plan it, book it, live it. One Travel.